Hello, it's Thursday, July 15th. I am Trent Rinesmith, and it's another edition of the Come On Now MMA podcast. Again, a lot to talk about, and again, some more UFC 264 fallout. And I think that's what I want to start with here, is just talking a little bit about the UFC 264 fallout and what's the story here about how the UFC handles its schedule. If it was up to me, the UFC, and it's obviously not up to me because the UFC is not listening to me ever. If it was up to me, though, I would have a break after every UFC pay-per-view event. 1 week, just a 1 week break, and then start up the promotion for the next fight card. The reason I would do it this way is because the example is this fight card, UFC 264. You had a ton of stories coming out of here that could have been explored a little more and a little more in depth, and that puts the attention on, you know, added attention on the fighters from UFC 264. So say you would have had, the MMA media would have had more time. We obviously would have been hearing a lot more about, say, Tai Tuivasa than we have. We'd have more time to explore the main event. We'd have more time to explore the future of Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor, but we don't. And instead, we're just going from a week of probably the biggest pay-per-view event of the year and then right into a UFC ESPN card that has a very important lightweight fight at the top of it. And what bothers me is that this is just bad for the fighters. Great for the UFC, because if you would have that week in between to an extra week in between to actually promote, not promote, but do the stories on these fighters to give them the exposure they deserve, that would help the fighters get, they'd be more promotable, they'd be more relatable to the fans. Tuivasa's story would be more evident, Poirier's future would be a little more evident, McGregor's, whatever's happening with McGregor would be a little more evident, but we don't have that. That's not a mistake. That's by design. The UFC's calendar is just relentless. And that's one, to make as much money as possible throughout the year. And two, to leave and keep the focus on UFC and not the fighters. And the fighters lose in this situation. And this is a perfect example of the fighters losing in that situation, because I guarantee you there's a ton of other stories that could have been explored about UFC 264 that are getting ignored just because of how fast the schedule is really going back to back to back here. I don't like it one bit. So more to UFC 264 fallout is Conor McGregor now coming out and saying that he had stress fractures. The UFC knew it, the UFC's doctor knew it, and they allowed him to fight. Here's the quote, and I think this was from his Instagram. "I was injured going into the fight. People were asking me, when was the leg break? At what point did the leg break? Asked Dana White, asked the UFC, asked Dr. Davidson, the head doctor of the UFC. They knew my leg. I had stress fractures in my leg going into that cage. There was debate about pulling the thing out because I was sparring without shin pads and I was kicking. I kicked the knee a few times, so I had multiple stress fractures in the shin bone above the ankle. And then I had trouble with the ankle anyway through the years of fighting all the time. And I was wrapping my ankle every training session. I even did a lot of the training sessions with the ankle when it's sore. I still wouldn't stop training." So this, to me, on the surface, is an excuse. Now, without coming right out and saying this, McGregor is saying the UFC, Dana White, and the doctor that's in charge, that works with the UFC, Dr. Davidson, were negligent in allowing him to fight. I think this is an excuse. I think this is Conor McGregor trying to put the onus on UFC, Dana White, and Dr. Davidson, and take away Dustin Poirier's shine, and saying, no, 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 this was going to happen regardless. They shouldn't have let me fight. That's how I'm reading this. And there's an easy way for this to be proved or disproved, and this is why I don't believe Conor McGregor. If Conor McGregor wants me to believe him, he's going to have to show me. He's not just going to have to tell me he has stress fractures. He's going to have to show me that he had stress fractures, and he's going to have to show me, and by me, I mean everyone, he's going to have to show everyone that these stress fractures were bad enough that there was a recommendation from someone, Dr. Davidson, UFC, that he should not fight. And until I see that, I'm going to have to side with UFC, Dana White, and Dr. Davidson. Now, on the same, by the same token, McGregor is accusing these people of negligence, medical negligence that could affect his future earnings and future career. And my question then is, if the UFC knows that this is not true, because McGregor has now accused the doctor of negligence, is the doctor free to release those reports on his own and say, this is all BS, here's the examinations, here is what McGregor reported on his pre-fight medicals? And if this goes back to McGregor, well then, that's what we need to see. We need to see who's lying here. Is it a lie of omission? Is it a lie of negligence? Did the UFC put on a fight without properly taking into account this fighter's pre-fight injuries? Did the fighter not reveal these pre-fight injuries? And there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. Every fighter is hurt going into a fight, guaranteed you that, but they're not all injured. And that's the difference. McGregor's saying these folks are negligent, and he's going to need to prove that for me to believe him. And, you know, I'm no fan of the UFC or Dana White or Dr. Davidson, but I think that the UFC, Dana White, and Dr. Davidson are smart enough to know that they're not going to set themselves up for a multi-million dollar lawsuit by allowing someone to participate in a fight that could affect their future earnings, especially when that person is Conor McGregor. So until McGregor shows me and proves to me that these folks were negligent, I'm not going to believe him for a second in this case. He's making, until that happens, Conor McGregor is doing nothing but making excuses for his loss to Dustin Poirier. Speaking of McGregor, here's a little something that I saw, and from the same thing, same interview, well, not interview, but he spoke about this on his Instagram, and this just made me think that Conor McGregor lives in some kind of MMA bizarro world. Here's his quote. I used to just train on my back, and that's how I developed those ground and pound shots from the back. That's why Dustin backed away when he was on top of me and I was landing the up kicks and the elbows. It's a horrible place to be in when you're against someone like me. You can't land. You take so much effort to try and land shots from your top position, and while you're trying to do that and losing your energy, you're getting lumped out by downward elbows and vicious up kicks. It was a skill I developed because I had the damaged leg and I had to adjust my training. Now, I would say watch the fight in slow motion. Watch the fight in as slow a speed as you can and as wide of an angle as you can, and you will see that this isn't true. McGregor scored with a couple nice elbows from the bottom, sure. I think one or two of the up kicks landed flush, sure. But Poirier wasn't backing up because of McGregor's strikes. Poirier was posturing up so he could land heavier strikes on McGregor. McGregor wasn't at a striking advantage from the bottom. Not for a second. So I don't know what fight he's watching, but it definitely wasn't this third fight with Dustin Poirier, because he was the one getting eaten up on the ground. Poirier was the one that was scoring with the strikes, not McGregor. Which again makes me believe that these are excuses and McGregor's not dealing with this loss even close to well. So come on now. Conor McGregor knows that he was not winning that fight. And if he doesn't know that, he really needs to watch it again. This is something that's been bothering me for a long time, and it's something I brought up before. And Dustin Stoltzfus, I'm sorry if I butchered that name, he's fighting this weekend against Rodolfo Vieira. And he says this fight is going to be his real UFC debut, because in his first fight, he was not feeling up to snuff. And he said that he was dealing with some COVID-19 related, not illness, but some issues that were lagging, that kept him from performing up to snuff. And here's what he said. It's a little bit hard to take a whole lot from that fight, meaning his first fight, mostly just because I hate making excuses for stuff. I really do, and it pains me to say it. I was really, really suffering from the long-term effects of COVID. I got tired within a minute and a half, and that never happens to me. And this, my problem with this is, and I've been railing for this since the reports came back as to what we don't know the long-term effects of COVID on, not just everyday people, but high-level athletes. And so my beef here is that the UFC and the commissions, and in this case, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, should be taking the time, effort, and energy, and money to better test these fighters who have tested positive for COVID-19. We need to know what's going on with them, and we need to know if they're in danger of long-term effects from COVID-19. We don't know that. And I know because I've asked, no one is doing additional testing. The UFC is not doing additional testing. Nevada State Athletic Commission is not doing additional testing. So if a fighter is, in their mind, healthy enough to fight, even if they've had COVID-19, they're just going to get the standard, regular medical exams that every fighter gets. And I think that is irresponsible of the UFC and of the Nevada State Athletic Commissions, and I wish that they would test more and better. We know that there are heart-related issues for long-term effects of COVID-19, but the UFC is not doing anything about that. And if a fighter is getting tired very quickly who had COVID-19, well, then there's some lingering effects, and we should try and figure out what that is. The UFC says their health and safety first. They're not showing it in this manner. And I'm not surprised by that, because the handling of COVID-19 overall and the attitude of the upper UFC management about COVID-19 was terrible. So hopefully Dustin Stoltzfus does not have any lingering effects in his second fight here after being diagnosed with COVID-19. But this is a fight you should watch just to see if he is still affected by COVID-19, and if he is, someone's got to do something about this. A fighters association would be a good way to deal with this, but there isn't one. If you were wondering if Ali Abdelaziz is a dirtbag, is a bad person, is just not a good man, well, I don't know why you would be wondering that, because he's shown us this in the past, but he once again upped the ante. And this is what he said about Colby Covington, who is probably going to fight Kamaru Usman, who Abdelaziz manages. That's the fight. Listen, last time they fought, he broke his jaw. This fight, I hope he becomes blind or something bad happens to him, because he's a very bad guy. He's on the same piece of shit level as Conor. They're head-to-head. He's a racist scumbag. I think he plays the race card, but I think he really is. Look, and I'm not going to defend Colby Covington ever, but to say this about another fighter, when you're not even a fighter, you're a manager, to trash talk like this, to be this just rotten and deplorable, to say you hope someone goes blind, just a shitty, shitty person. If you had any doubts, and I did not, that Ali Abdelaziz is a bad person, he affirmed those thoughts. He is not a good person. And I'm not saying Colby Covington is a good person either, but in this case, to wish someone to go blind, come on, man, especially since it could really happen in this sport, is just a really stupid and hateful thing to say. But Ali Abdelaziz, and we know who he is, and I still wonder why he gets so much goddamn attention from the MMA media when he is nothing but a bad person. And in my opinion, he's also a bad manager. But that's just my opinion, isn't it? Today's Come On Now. And Abdelaziz doesn't get a Come On Now because it's even worse than that. He just gets a inch go away. But today's Come On Now is Joe Schilling. So we know he lit up that dude in the bar. It looks bad on tape. And Schilling is not helping himself in this comment he made to Helen Yee. I can't really speak about what happened that night. I think the witness's testimony is out there. A lot of people aren't covering it. The guy's personal track record and criminal history is out there, but nobody seems to be talking about it. I'm just going to have to relay that back to them. No charges have been filed whatsoever, and it's just a lot of media speculation at this point. I did nothing wrong, and I stand by that. So I'm going to take all this other, I did nothing wrong, and remove that, because I don't really care about that. That's going to be up to the authorities to decide. And if it's me, I'm going to say it doesn't look good. But to bring this up, the guy's quote unquote personal track record and criminal history, what does that have to do with Joe Schilling punching him in the face in a bar? Like, I don't care what this guy did in the past, because that's unrelated to what Joe Schilling did. Schilling's going to make himself seem like a hero here because he punched this guy who was allegedly making racist comments to other people. But that's not Schilling's job to deal with. That's the job of the restaurant, the bar, wherever this was. They can deal with that to light the guy up. And it looked like both those guys were looking for a fight and they got it. But to try and turn it around after the fact and say, I'm the white knight here because this guy has a police record, has been arrested or whatever. No, you don't get to shame this guy after you knocked him out. You don't get to do that. The only thing that we know is what we saw. And while neither person looks good in that exchange, Schilling looks 1,000% worse because he laid his hands on some dude and knocked him out. The past, the future, has nothing to do with that moment. That's the moment it happened. That's the moment we're focused on. And for Joe Schilling to try and, victim blame, victim shame this guy, no, that doesn't work. So come on now, Joe Schilling. You know what you're doing, and you know what you did. Conor McGregor is really getting raked over the coals here for the comments he made to Dustin Poirier and Dustin Poirier's family, and yeah, rightfully so. But this isn't the first time that Conor McGregor said bad things about people. He used a Dancing Monkeys reference when in the lead up to the Floyd Mayweather fight. There was all kinds of bitches going on in the Floyd Mayweather fight, back and forth. He said he was gonna ride into Jose Aldo's favela and kill everyone that was unfit to work. And where was the uproar then? I know that there were some people that spoke up about it. I was one of them. But shit, come on, man. When he's winning and he's at the top of the world and he's fighting Floyd Mayweather, it's okay to say these things. But now that he's losing and he's lost a little bit of his shine and the idea that, you might not get to fight him because he's just not the draw, or he's not that good anymore, that's when you speak up? No. Conor McGregor's been saying these kind of things for a long, long time. He's been saying borderline racist, borderline xenophobic stuff, and no one has really spoke up about it. Well, now they are. Now they're speaking up about him being a bad person. But he's the same person. It's just that everyone's kind of noticed it now that he's on the downward trajectory and they feel safer speaking up on it. You don't get to do that. It's just a bad look. If you were there, if you were doing it from the get-go, fine. But to jump on it now, it seems kind of cowardly and kind of groupthinky that now that everybody or the majority of people are against him, that you can speak up against him. I find that very cowardly, and I wish more people would, if you see something bad, or you see a bad person, or you hear someone saying something stupid, racist, xenophobic, sexist, hateful. We'll call them out at that time. Don't reserve the right to bring it up later. It looks like you're just jumping on the bandwagon, and a lot of people are jumping on this bandwagon right now. I got some things here from more things from the ESPN interview that Khabib Nurmagomedov did. And the first one is the Islam Makhachev fight with Thiago Moises this weekend. And this is a... Makhachev is going to have a lot of pressure on him here. And that pressure is going to come from Khabib, because Khabib is his training partner, works with him very closely. But also, the pressure is going to be there from Khabib's father, because before he died, the discussion was that Khabib could only retire when he was kind of edging out of the game and Makhachev was heading towards the top. The idea of from Nurmagomedov's father was that they would kind of meet in the middle there, and there would be a kind of an exchange. Nurmagomedov would leave, Makhachev would go to the top and win the belt at lightweight. That was the plan. That plan fell apart, quote unquote, apart a little bit. Got delayed is a better way to look at it, when Nurmagomedov retired a little earlier than I think was intended. And I mean, I think we understand why he retired at that time, so no issue there. But the expectation here is that, and this is the expectation of Nurmagomedov, and the expectation that his Nurmagomedov's father had for Makhachev, is that he is going to win this fight, dominate this fight, and then move up and eventually fight for the title and win it. Khabib said that he thinks that will happen next year, and that he will be the champion for 2 to 3 years, and then he will retire as champion. That's the plan. So I don't know much about Makhachev, but I know that he is favored here, but he has a lot of people looking at him as the next big thing at lightweight, and those people include Khabib Nurmagomedov, and we know that Khabib Nurmagomedov's father also felt that. So this is a huge fight for him, and the pressure is not going to stop here. He has to win this, and then in order to fulfill the wishes of the Nurmagomedovs, he's going to have to go on to win the title and hold the title. So no pressure, no pressure. Something that also stuck out in this interview for me was Nurmagomedov's, Khabib's, way he coaches and advises fighters. And here is what he said, a little bit of what he said, is that he doesn't want fighters who are in his camp, in his gym, under him, who are not 100% invested in MMA. They can't have any kind of outside thoughts, outside worries, outside concerns. MMA has to come first, because like he said in this interview, you can't play MMA. You can get hurt very bad. And he says that he sees a lot of people who are not fully invested, and what happens to them is they get injured and they take damage. And he specifically said the knockouts and the damage to the brain are his big concern. If you're not fully invested, then you're going to probably slip up at least a little bit, and you're going to get tagged more than you probably should. And if you're not fully invested, but all you know is MMA, and this is something that was in there too, is that, well, you're going to get hurt, and eventually you're just going to end up taking fight after fight after fight and getting knocked out and accumulating brain injuries. And Nurmagomedov does not want his fighters to do that. So if he sees someone that is not fully invested, 100% invested in their career and in the sport, he tells them bluntly that, you know, you need to have a different career. This is not for you. And that's fine. But what he does that is impressive in all this is that he then does not just abandon that person, does not abandon that fighter. He helps them to find a job in MMA or somewhere else so that they have income. He doesn't just say, you know, this career is not for you, and then kick them out of the gym and let them, you know, wander aimlessly and try and figure out what to do. He helps them, he assists them, and he tries to give them a career outside of the fight game. That's a very admirable way to do things, And I wish more coaches would take that tack. You know, at the very least, you know, you can advise them, I don't see your investment in this as paying off in any way but harm. So maybe, you know, you need to consider something else. And I'm going to help you figure out what that is. So I really was very impressed with that. And I wish and hope that others follow this path that Nurmagomedov is that going down. And I think what makes it even better is that here we have a top-level fighter who is retired. He knows the pitfalls. He knows what not being 100% invested can do and what can happen. And then he doesn't want that to happen to others. Not that it happened to him, because it definitely did not. But he doesn't want that to happen. So he can see what he knows could be bad, and he reacts to it. Very admirable, and something that should be replicated by every gym, top to bottom. You don't want to be the person who is responsible for someone who's not invested getting hurt, getting injured, having long-lasting injuries or long-lasting damage. You don't want to be that person. And that's all I have for tonight. Again, edging in here on a half hour. I've had some good episodes here. Hopefully everyone agrees. And we'll be back after the fight on Saturday. See what happens. See how it shakes out. And see if Islam Makhachev can live up to the Nurmagomedov family's expectations. So until then, everyone stay safe.